Accession number 16801, Reel 1.
Mr. Proctor, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
Accrington, Lancashire.
Which year was this?
14th 11th, 1920.
Did you go to school in Accrington?
No.
Where did you go?
I went to school at a place called Dominion after my parents moved. I would be about 3 years of age when I went to Todmorden, and it was in the Ebden Bridge area. From there, we moved further into Todmorden, into a place called Portsmouth, which is the top end of Todmorden, top end of what we termed the Calder Valley area. My parents, during the course of my youthful days, made several moves in the same area, and this was purely for economic reasons and unemployment.
What had your father done for a living?
My father was a... Are we still on tape?
Yes.
Yeah. My father, and I've got to go back a little bit, he was a 1418 soldier. He'd served in South Africa prior to the war. From South Africa, he came to France. And he was wounded in 1917, but he fought on the Somme and various areas. After the war, he married my mother, 1919. She... yes, I suppose it doesn't really matter.
You're just telling me what you did for
she,
a living.
What he did for a living, yeah. He was a foundry man. Also a miner. Also worked for the Todmorden Corporation. Roads, etc., you know, the kind of thing. That was his life around that. But employment was scarce those days, as you'll appreciate.
How old were you when you left school?
I was 14.
Did you get a job?
Yes. Oh, yes, I had a job. I originally went into the mills, cotton mills. I was a cotton mill operative, if you like to put it that way.
So how did you come to be in the army?
Well, I was a bit of a rebel. Soldiering I wanted to be my life. And I made 3 attempts to enlist at a very tender age of 15. Bury Barracks, you probably know where that is in Lancashire, and Halifax Barracks. On these 2 occasions, I was brought back with my parents and got pasted for it, if you understand, from father. In due course of time...
Why was he so opposed to it?
I don't know. He, as I say, he was a soldier himself, a very proud man, too. Holder of the military medal. And there's one other decoration, but I don't know about that. Men and wives didn't talk to the children those days as we talk to children today. he was born in Ossetwistle, actually. And I think they were hard people and hard family life. So they kept things to themselves.
So you didn't really know why he opposed your job?
No. I think it was probably because he'd had a hard life himself in the services. He thought perhaps I shouldn't go anywhere. And it could be that he was thinking of my mother. She was a good mum. And she kept us fed and watered because she was a first-class cook. I mean, she could make a meal out of a school bucket, if you understand the phrase, what I'm referring to. And consequently, we was well-fed and clothed. But we were poor. Make no mistake about it. We were very poor.
So how did you eventually join up?
Well, I was 17 and a bit. keep my hand away from my mouth. And I desperately wanted to get away and see the world, if you like to put it that way. And I said to my mother, I'm going to enlist. She says, well, we knew it was coming anyway in Tunning. And I went to Halifax, Dale Street in Halifax. And my original regiment I wanted to be in was the Scots Greys. But of course, the recruiting officer of those days poo-hooed the idea, in so much that he wanted to fill infantry regiments ranks, if you understand me. And there was a reason for that, obviously. So, he said, unless you're of a genuine Scottish descendant, no chance. So I said, oh, well, I'll go home. Not interested. I also wanted to put some distance between my hometown and me, of course. They being stationed up in Scotland. Once again, the reason being that if I was making a break, I had to make a break and not be living on the doorstep like at Bury or Halifax. I wanted to get away and re-establish me, myself. So he said, if you're interested, he said, we have other Scottish regiments. And we went through them and looked at photographs of them. Yes, up there now. Not the original, of course. And I said, where is this regiment stationed? He said, Stirling Castle. I said, right. I love that one. So I said, okay, but first things first, I've got some work to do, height, measurements, health. Checked out, there was a little elderly gentleman came out the back room with a pair of stethoscopes around his ear, you know, sort of thing. Very poor, very crude those days. And he said, okay, we'll take you. Particulars was taken. And he gave me the king's shilling and travelling expenses.
Was it an actual shilling?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. He had them in a tin. And I put that in my pocket. He said, now, he said, your bus fare, which was very cheap those days. I mean, we're only looking at 9 pence return. But he gave me 18 pence, or 1 and 6 pence, if you like. And he said, report back here a week today, which is what I did. Went home and saw my parents. My father was very angry. He blustered a lot. And I said, look at it this way, Dad. I said, I'm going into the services, whether you like it or not. I said, I've promised to make Mother an allowance. I said, she doesn't have to keep me. And she will get that allowance. So he said, well, that's not the issue. He said, I don't want you to go. He said, the bloody war of... The war will be on, he said, soon enough. And on hindsight, sometimes I wish I'd have waited. But then, by the time war came, I was already in Palestine, and I was a fully trained soldier. So it swings and roundabouts, if you understand me. So you just said not to move. Right, and I enjoyed soldiering. I loved it, no question about that.
We should say that you joined the Argyle, did you have a
Oh, yes, oh yes, correction there. I joined the Argyles in Stirling and did basic training. And then in due course of time from there I went down to Plymouth, to the Royal Citadel Barracks. And we had an affinity with the Navy, in so much as that two barrack blocks were set aside for the Argyles. Strange enough, and because we had the Plymouth Hill there. Do you know Plymouth at all?
Yes.
And you know where the Citadel Barracks is?
Yes.
On the corner, well, it was there. And because we used to parade and exercise on the Plymouth Hill. The main band would march off and... the few pipers that we had would march away and so forth. And then came the day for sailing for Palestine. So we entrained in Plymouth.
Is this the 1st Battalion?
Yes, yes. Entrained in Plymouth and proceeded to Southampton, I think. Yes, Southampton. And from there onwards into Palestine. Now, when we get to Palestine, when we get into Palestine via Jib, we were sort of alerted and talked to about the problems we would encounter. So,
what type of things did they tell you?
We were talking about the troubles that had been and to expect, and various regiments had covered areas and lost one or two men, etc. It was the Jews and Arabs. And our job was merely a policing operation, so we was informed. Obviously, to return fire if we was attacked. And, of course, just before we docked, we was issued with live ammunition. And we sent 20 men ashore onto the... This was a more or less a... You know we're coming attitude, if you understand what I'm meaning. An exercise on how we was going to adopt ourselves once we got there. And these men fanned out at the docks, knelt down, rifles facing the crowd, whilst the rest of the battalion and men of other regiments came ashore.
This is at Haifa, is it?
Haifa, yeah. And... And then we proceeded to a place called Jenin.
Which month do you think that you landed at Haifa?
Must have been June or July. July.
1938.
Yeah. Yeah, must have been July.
Did you think that all that drama of the landing was necessary?
No, not really. Not really. It was a show. The Commissioner of Police was there. The dignitaries of Arabs and Jews was in the area. And the locals were layabouts, dockers and the Arabs was all watchful. It was an impressive show in so much as we ran down the gangplank on the command, fanned out, rifles to the shoulder, kneeling position, you know, the square, this nonsense. Reminiscence of the battles of the Nile and Omdurman, if you wish, form a square. Free rank, you know the sort of business.
Were you kilted?
Yes, oh yes. Kilted, tropical tunic, topi, battle order. Battle order those days was much heavier than later days, if you understand me. That was a big, big kit back on your back. And when we all came ashore, or the rest of the team came ashore, we embossed in various vehicles and went up to Battalion HQ, which was at Jenin. Stayed overnight there, then sectioned off to go out to the following outposts. I finished up at a place called Kafir. K-U-F-A-R-I. And there was only two officers, two sergeants, and about 20 men. It was a compound which was barbed wired on a hill. Now, we had three of these. Ulamfad was one other, and a place called Kafirai, which sounds very similar to Kafir. We was, I was D Company then, and I think B and B and C, I think it was B and C, was at these other points. Now, the operation centre there was rather, immediately to me, laughable. I'm sure somebody will jump that in time. Purely because there was three large blocks there, dining room, sleeping quarters, a little area for officers' quarters, and a sort of a canteen. Water point in the centre, looked after by an old Arab. And he made me laugh at this particular man because for a few acres, he used to lift a donkey up. Powerful built. Put it around his neck. And it was no small donkey. Anyway, our job there was to observe the village. We had a sangha built, you know, metal roof, four posts, and a few sandbags around you. And everything was entered into the book from dawn till dusk. Five bents, four children, eight camels, two men. Now, at the end of the day, that was, they had to come out again, obviously. And if those figures didn't tally, we used to say, there's people in that village. So what happened then at the night? We dressed in evening kit, which was a woolly. Slack, a woolen woolly, you know, cardigan then. Slacks, sand shoes, rifles were muffled, the toggles, that, you know what I mean. And under the guidance of an officer and sergeant, we used to go down to the village. Encircle it, wait till dawn broke, and then make ourselves rather unpleasant till we found out who and what was in the area. Children over there, ladies over there, the men folk here. Three separate sections. And we used to search the property. If we wanted information, what we used to do was get the ladies, and where the water well, or the old water well, was in the centre of the square, we used to stand them at, not over the hole, but 200-300 yards back, and show them where we were going to put the men, which we did. Then we removed the ladies, got all the men out and hid them round the corner, brought the ladies back, and threw a grenade down there. And then the information came.
From the women.
From the women. And when the chappie from the Palestinian police, I think he was an inspector, had got the information he wanted, he used to just nod his head, and we brought the menfolk back round.
How did the women react then?
Oh, mum, you know, the cry and tears and etc. And then I think they looked at us. Perhaps more, not of fear, respect.
But presumably you could only do that once, because the word would spread.
Well, that is true. But then there were other tactics. There were other tactics. The principle applied right throughout Palestine. And in fact, our RSM, our CSM of B Company, one private soldier and one officer, on another incident, the CSM got the military medal. On the second incident, he got the Distinguished Conduct Medal. And the officer got awarded, and the private soldier, Spracken was his name, I believe, he got the military medal. So we established ourselves, but soldiering was dull, hard work, foot slogging, disappointment, and generally one wondered what all the fuss was about.
How do you mean?
Well,
because it was relatively peaceful, you mean?
Yes, it was relatively peaceful. It wasn't all blood and guts, if you understand me. I mean, as these people make it out to be. Well, the authors and etc. of these books. It was, in my view, anyway, damned hard work, weary work, disappointment at not catching who he was looking for, and generally, I won't say a waste of time, we were soldiers, that's a profession, but generally, well, we could have done something better somewhere. If, can you understand what I'm saying? We should have caught half a dozen of this and half a dozen of that. Patrols we dealt with, and one night, one particular incident, we had to go into Tel Aviv to quiet the Jews. Now that was rather interesting because Tel Aviv was an up-and-coming town, would you call it? Yes, a large town, right on the right on the sea. We were stationed in the town, and provided you kept your eyes open, you could get around a little bit. Not too far, but around. Facilities was laid on for men who wandered them on Saturday night. I mean, these motels, if you wish. Didn't appeal to me a great deal because I was more interested in sport and I wasn't interested in that kind of thing. I was frightened, to be honest with you.
Venereal disease.
Yes, exactly. And I was more frightened of the punishment I would have got than anything else. So, I mean, you had your lime juice and your citrus fruits and that, and you got through it that way.
What punishment would you have got?
Well, it was definitely a loss of pay. We could have been sent to Nathania to the military prison there, or detention, that kind of thing. Depending upon the severity of it. I mean, the colonel was he was a great guy, was Anderson, Lieutenant Colonel Anderson, MC. No question about it. We were all professionals, from the rank of colonel down to the humble private soldier. So we knew what was expected of us. And I think 95% of the men stationed in the times respected that, if you understand me. Yes, we had the drinkers. We had the slight disobedience of men in... soldiers grumbled, if you like. They were right, officers were wrong, but it wasn't quite as bad as that. But the patrols were very interesting because come midnight, we used to, a bunch of us, with three or four vehicles with wire over them, would wait on a corner, out of sight. And in the still of the night, clip clop of feet, immediate challenge, stand still, arrestment. And this happened several times.
Is this in the villages?
No, this was in Tel Aviv. This was a Jewish area now. There was one incident at the marshalling yards where we got ambushed. And the only way out of that was a truck which we had. Got aboard, fixed bayonets, and pointed it over the side. The men sat on the back, if you understand me. The officer drive, and we got through. They did set fire to...
Who was ambushing them?
The Jews.
Because I thought it was the Arabs.
No, no. The Jews were... the Jews had an element of... they were a fractured section from the Stern gang, who were stirring trouble. You know, agitators. They fought with the Arabs, who in turn fought with them, and then everybody turned on us.
But what In the ambush, were they firing on you?
Oh, no, no. No, no. There was, but there was there was many thousands of them. They were closing the marshalling yard down. It would have been a stoning job. And stones hurt and kill you.
So you were surrounded by a mob?
We were a mob of agitators, let's put it this way. Stick weaving, shouting and things like that. But you must remember, we were only young soldiers. And it was a bit nerve-wracking, even for the officers, never mind them, the men.
What were they agitated about regarding the marshalling?
The fact that we was there.
But what did the marshalling yard have to do then?
Well, we went round to search it, if you understand me. We went round to look if there was anything on trucks, things of this nature. There was, in fact, most 90% of it was molasses wagons. You know, where they turned the taps on and fired it as well. It wasn't very pleasant. They set fire to the molasses on the wagons, the agitators, which created a great smoke. However, we got on the truck and we pushed our way through them.
And these were all Jews?
Jews and Arabs. It's a funny thing about Jews and Arabs. When it suited their purpose, they would join ranks. Let's put it to you this way. If they decided to put ashore for the British, they joined ranks. If they decided to have a little battle amongst themselves, that was a different matter. One other incident I can remember, Muckle, having said that, it wasn't all fragments of agitation that we had to put up. We had pleasurable incidents as well. Football, cinema shows in the evening, officers have visited round and talking to men and sort of having a jolly time. Particularly the ones that was at Junin, which was battalion headquarters. But we used to come in from the hills. Oh, incidentally, when we set off on patrol from the hills, now, you may say, it's funny this, we used to pay, or the government paid, a driver who was Jewish to drive an ordinary truck, which had been double-plated at the bottom of it, to clear the mines as we patrolled. I never saw one blown up yet. Let's put it that way. And he used to drive, oh, probably 300-500 yards in front of us. And then we'd signal to him to stop because we was going to have a get off the trucks. Just the surrounding hills, because they came right down to the edge of the road, whatever. And just see what was going on there. And then we also did Jewish areas as well. Now, one particular place, I've got to get this on paper because everybody says, what? You don't want me to swear, do you?
Carry on.
What bastards the Germans was, if you understand me. At a later date, we're talking now about the Jews and the Holocaust. We raided a Jewish encampment, or a kibbutz, if you like.
Kibbutz.